This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we once again talk with Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke as he tries to recruit volunteers to help with a mass vaccination campaign against COVID-19, when and if the plentiful supply of vaccine required for such a campaign becomes available. We also talk with him about a proposal to completely overhaul Washington's public health system, now before the state legislature, that, if passed, would relegate county health officers like him to the dustbin of history. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Several minutes after he failed to appear for our scheduled Zoom interview, Jefferson County Public Health Officer Tom Locke texted an apology, saying he was tied up in a meeting and would be half an hour late. Such is the life of a public health officer in the time of COVID-19. Naturally, my first question was to ask him what meeting it was that had detained him. So you're just coming from a meeting. What meeting were you at?
Well, it's actually an immunization coordinating meeting. So we're coordinating what the hospital, the Department of Emergency Management, and the Jefferson County Public Health, you know, all our different vaccine-related efforts. Right now, our supply of vaccine is very limited, but it's not always going to be that way. So we want to be prepared to, when we get enough vaccine to start doing large-scale events, we want to be prepared to do that.
I noticed that there is now an online place to go and sign up for people who are eligible for the vaccine at this point, which I went and put my name on it yesterday.
Oh, great, great.
But maybe we could just at the top here, like put out that information about how to sign up when you become eligible and who is eligible when.
The statewide standard is you have to be 65 years of age and older, or be a member of a multi-generational household and be 50 and over. And we figured out what that actually means is if you are over 50 and you're taking care of a elderly parent in your home,
right?
Then you're eligible. Also, if you're a grandparent and has over age 50 and has legal custody and is taking care of your grandchildren, that's also an eligible category. In Jefferson County right now, we're focusing on the older groups. Yeah, so we're trying to start with those 75 years of age and older because that's where the highest risk is, the highest mortality risk.
Right. I was just reading an article about the devastating consequences of like a high school teacher who died upon, of course, his family, but his community and so on and so forth. And I was just thinking, well, are teachers being prioritized or other like essential workers? I mean, are they going to get an opportunity before just the population at large?
Yes, they're in the next group. So in the state priorities, there's four tiers coming up. And the tier one is based on age. And that's the one we're in now. And then the next tier, what's called B2, is essential workers, as defined by the state. And really, there's some confusion about that because it's, everybody is essential in various ways. What it's really meant to be is people whose work as an essential worker puts them into these COVID-19 exposure situations. So teachers are in that group, law enforcement, firefighters, grocery store workers are in that essential group. And under the governor's current criteria, you have to be an essential worker and be 50 and older. That may not stay that way. You know, there's debate about that, whether that's the right way to do it, because it makes it harder for us to vaccinate people, especially on a large scale. If we go to a school and we can only do half the teachers, you know, then we've got to go back all over again.
Can people go into the website now and just put in their names and their age and, you know, whether they're an essential worker or not, and then have the system spit out an appointment for whenever they're eligible?
No. What people can put that information into this state utility called Phase Finder, and it will tell you what group you're in, and it'll also tell you places in your county that have vaccine. But to actually schedule an appointment, you have to go through the scheduling portal of that particular site. And we put that information up on our Jefferson County publichealth.org website. It's on the hospital website as well, because it's essentially the hospital and three pharmacies right now is where the vaccine is in the county. And Safeway and QFC schedule through their national system. And Tri-Area Pharmacy in Port Hadlock is scheduling through a software utility they have also online. And then Jefferson Healthcare, who has been shipped the lion's share of vaccine in the county and has been doing an extraordinary job administering it, they have scheduling software that's both online, and there's kind of a hotline that's manned by volunteers at Department of Emergency Management.
Now, what about people who are at sort of exceptional risk because of their underlying health conditions, who may not be 65, but maybe a whole slew of underlying conditions that put them at sort of extraordinary risk?
So they're in the next tier, you know, 16 to 65 with two or more what are called comorbidities. And there's an official list that the Centers for Disease Control keeps of comorbidities. And there's some that are high risk factors and some that are lower risk factors. But having two or more of off of either of those lists is considered the criteria. But that's sort of in a third tier. And then there's a fourth tier that is people in homeless shelters and prison inmates and other higher risk situations. And, you know, people could argue endlessly about different ways to do this. But really what's driving it now is the supply of vaccine is not even close to the demand. The priorities are really set to try to save lives. Who is most likely to die of COVID-19? And in the case of healthcare workers, it's, you know, who are we going to need to keep on the job for the next 4 to 6 months while this infection is still surging in the population?
Right. Well, I mean, that's why I was asking about, you know, like those people who have like exceptional underlying conditions, because it seems quite likely to me that you could have a 70-year-old who was in really great shape and has no underlying conditions at all and is actually at much less risk, perhaps, than somebody who's like 40 and has like several.
Yeah, although what the data tells us and what the national advisory groups came down to is age is really the overwhelming risk.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, that is real solid. And, you know, fortunately, people with the other risk factors, you know, are at less risk if they're younger. But anyone at any age can suffer complications and can die of COVID-19. The difference is the probability, you know, that it's a very rare event in the young and middle-aged, and it becomes more and more common the older we get. But there's no perfect way to do this. And anyone who has to wait longer than they want to or are willing to wait is not going to be happy about that.
Right.
And I don't blame them. It's a perfectly normal human reaction.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about the rollout of the vaccine. And because, I mean, as you say, there's not enough to go to everybody who wants it now. However, we keep hearing that actually there's a lot more vaccine available than has been gotten into people's shoulders. And so I was just wondering, what are the logistical hangups that have slowed that? I mean, I noticed that actually Jefferson County is doing exceptionally well.
And Clallam as well, and Kitsap is really ramping up as well. I think the sort of disappointing statistics you see came with the very first wave, the 1A wave, which was very slow to get off the ground. There were a number of national pharmacy chains that were contracted to immunize nursing home residents, and they're only getting to it now. And this vaccine arrived in the middle of December. In Jefferson County, we went in and vaccinated the workers in the long-term care facilities, even though they were eligible for the federal vaccine, just because it was taking too long.
So what was the hang up there?
I think it was a workforce issue, as they did not have the teams to go out to the nursing homes. And a number of hospitals were slow to vaccinate their workforce. So we spent, you know, almost the first month on that 1A group. And then now that we've opened up into the 1B group, we are administering vaccine in Washington State right now as fast as it's coming in. And there's some reporting problems where there's people who we think have administered vaccine, but they haven't reported what they've done with it. So the state doesn't know if that's has been given to someone or it's sitting in a refrigerator. But this problem is going to go away quickly because the new rule is if you have vaccine, you have to use it in 7 days. And the demand is so high, we can do that right now.
Which has basically been your policy from the beginning, as I recall. I mean, you were always...
Yeah.
So I noticed that you have put out the call for volunteers. So what kinds of volunteers are you looking for?
Both those with healthcare skills and also those who don't have healthcare skills, because there'll be necessary work in a lot of different capacities. Our highest priority volunteers are people who have healthcare licenses and can administer vaccine. They're either actively working as medical workers or they're recently retired and have active licenses. So those are the people that it's easiest to put to work quickly. But when we get into the mass vaccination phase, the logistics of moving people around and you know, getting people to come on time and wait in their cars and do their paperwork and then escort them into the facility and help them move from place to place. And then there's all this data that we have to enter, you know, when we give the vaccine. It's not as simple as giving a shot. We have to enter this whole profile into a state immunization registry. And so people to do that. And then we need emergency personnel who can observe people for allergic reactions, which is fortunately proving to be quite rare, you know, in the order of 1 in 100,000. But when it does occur, it can be very severe. And so we need to be prepared to react to those severe allergic reactions. And EMTs and licensed healthcare providers are all trained in that kind of the treatment of anaphylaxis. So we need those groups. And then we need schedulers to do the second dose schedule, because this is a two-dose vaccine at this point. So the logistics of this are really daunting.
I imagine you're really quite interested and even anxious for the single-dose vaccines to emerge. I mean, I heard that Johnson & Johnson might be making some kind of announcement like this week, but I gather it's been pushed off to next week, for example. I don't know if you've heard rumors about that vaccine.
I have. The rumor that's not encouraging is that they're starting a two-dose trial. That would suggest that the one dose is not as effective as they want it to be. But we're only going to know when we see the data. I mean, even the current vaccines give some protection after the first dose, but we don't know how long it lasts, and it's not near as robust as after the second dose. And we're seeing a tenfold increase in antibody response after the second dose.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's a point of debate right now. There are some very reputable, sincere vaccine experts that say, you know, maybe we ought to vaccinate everyone with one dose with our current vaccines and then come back sometime 4 to 6 months later and vaccinate everyone with their second dose. The only problem with that, well, there's many problems, but the chief one is that's just a completely unknown area. We have not tested these vaccines in that way. We don't know whether that will work, whether the effect of the first vaccine might wear off in a matter of weeks to months. And that's not going to be enough to bring this under control.
Let's move back to talking about the volunteers for a moment again. You told me yesterday that volunteers would get their vaccine if you're going in and working in that context.
You know, absolutely, we want the people who are actually doing these, you know, what are called patient-facing services. So you're kind of within that six-foot zone and doing something that you can't do remotely, namely like giving a shot. Right. People who are giving vaccines are currently in the 1A priority group. So they're eligible right now. They could show up in a clinic and get the vaccine if it was available.
Oh, I see, but not everybody at the hospital, for example, is eligible. They're not everybody who works in a health clinic is 1A.
No, although they've really, the state encouraged us, you know, if we had vaccine available, that to look at healthcare workers broadly. Yeah, I mean, that's been the challenge all through it, is to keep the hospitals open and functioning and doing all the non-COVID things they need to do in addition to COVID response. And, you know, it's very difficult when healthcare workers are exposed and we have to quarantine them. We have to take them off the job for 14 days and quarantine them. That's hugely disruptive to hospital operations, even if they don't get the infection. And if they get the infection, it's even worse. So being able to vaccinate that workforce is huge.
Right.
But otherwise, yes, there will be, in the way these vaccines are distributed, you're always at risk of having leftover doses. You know, once you open a vial, you have to use it all within a certain time period. We will almost certainly be using the more durable vaccine, the Moderna vaccine. And so that's 10 doses in a vial. So once you take one dose out, you have to use all the rest within 6 hours. And so at the end of the vaccine event, you would always use up all the vaccine. You'd find people, you know, even if they weren't in one of the priority groups, you'd use it up. So with sufficient vaccine, yes, we would want to, in a kind of a tiered approach, vaccinate the people who are involved in the events. We don't really want people to show up and be a volunteer for one or two events just to get vaccinated.
And then disappear. You know, right.
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges of this is we are looking at sustaining this effort for 4 months or longer to get through, you know, in a county of 32,000 people, you know, I think likely 25 to 26,000 will want to be vaccinated. You know, and that's a lot of people.
Well, we're talking about things that could really cause huge logistical problems. A couple of bills that are wending their way through the legislature, they're in committee right now, that would completely reorganize Washington's public health system right here in the middle of this pandemic. I know you know about those because I've seen your name in the paper about them. So maybe you could, you know, like outline for our audience what those bills do and what the rationale is behind making these huge changes right. It's really kind of changing horses in midstream, it seems to me.
Well, I think there's some very good intent behind it, but I think there's also the potential for some very serious unintended consequences. I testified on that bill last Thursday. It's in the House Health Committee, chaired by Representative Eileen Cody, who is an institution in Washington State, and really took note that Representative Cody started the hearing with an apology to the public health system about how woefully they had underfunded it for years and years and years. And they realized that. And that's one of the main reasons we're having such a problem with our public health system. The state has underfunded, even cut back funding for the system. So that's the good part of it, is the state realizing what they've done and proposing that they would open up a substantial new source of revenue to fund public health. And it would be a tax on insurance premiums is what they're proposing. So that's the good part of it. There's also a good part that the governor recognizes that public health has been politicized in this state in some very unfortunate ways, with boards of health attacking health officers and firing them for doing the right thing, for following the science instead of the politics. And so the governor has stated he wants to try to take the politics out of local public health. But the proposal is to do away with local boards of health and local health officers and regionalize everything. So there's district boards of health, and health officers would be employees of the state. And that, in the view of someone like me, who's been doing this since the mid-80s, the state is not free from politics. Governors and legislators have their own agendas, and working with the Secretary of Health as your boss, whose boss is the governor, really creates a very different system. It creates a kind of centralized system where the state makes the decisions and implements them at a regional basis.
I hope it doesn't embarrass you for me to tell you that I believe that it's been a big boon to Jefferson County to have our own Board of Health and to have, you know, like you as our public health officer on our community radio station before the Board of County Commissioners every Monday morning. And I kind of hate the idea of losing you, particularly like right now in the middle of the pandemic. And I don't know what the planned timeline is on this, but this just seems like really the wrong moment to make this change.
Well, that's just to reassure people that the legislation in its, you know, in its current proposed form, and it's, you know, it's subject to amendment by the legislature. But under the current system, if they were to pass it this year, during this calendar year, there would be some sort of commission that would design the new system. So nothing would change in 2021. And then in 2022, there would be some sort of transition process, and the whole thing would not fully be implemented till 2023. But our sort of emphatic testimony to the governor and the Department of Health is we do not have time now to redesign the system. I cannot be on state committees working on a redesign that takes effect years from now. We are stretched to the max in disease containment, in trying to help the schools stay open, in doing an incredibly ambitious rollout of vaccines, all with really no extra resources. We are promised additional resources for the vaccine rollout, but right now, that is non-existent. We are pulling staff off of other projects to kind of keep up with this. So when we need enhanced funding for public health, I mean, we've needed it for 10 years, but we especially need it right now.
How can people who are interested in volunteering do that?
The Jefferson County Department of Emergency Management, they have a website, they have a phone number. They are eagerly accepting applications for volunteers just at all different skill levels. And, you know, a lot of this stuff will just train people at the event about how to help move people around and keep themselves safe. So these will be, you know, as much of possible of it will be outdoors. But what we're currently exploring is a high school gymnasium model.
And how frequent do you think these events are going to be? I mean, what are people signing up for in terms of like hours of work a week or whatever?
It's going to be very much dependent on vaccine supplies.
Right.
But potentially, you know, if we do it in high school gymnasiums, we kind of have to do it on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And so conceivably, it could be Saturday and Sunday for, you know, multiple weekends for several months until we get through the list of people that want to be vaccinated. And another advantage of these kind of models too, is we can move around the county. And this, it's very important for people to realize we're not proposing replacing anything that the hospital is doing. You know, the hospital is committed to keeping up their extraordinary effort. We're just planning for the day when we have even more vaccine than that system can accommodate, and then we will have this ready to go to make that vaccine available. And we think that's a ways off. It's probably at least a month off. It could be longer. It just all depends on all the vaccine comes from the national supplies. It's allocated to the different states. We in Jefferson County have no control over that at all. Even the state of Washington has no control over how much they receive.
Do you even get projections?
Washington's getting about the equivalent of about 15,000 doses a day, 100,000 a week. And we need about three times that much to really ramp up into this mass vaccination phase.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time today. I don't know if you have any parting words you'd like to make.
Well, no, just that in response to your early or flattery, I mean, this is not only a privilege, but it's my job. As there's a literally a line in the statute that says to educate the public on the causes and prevention of disease is in the job title of a health officer. So I really appreciate the KPTZ opportunity to fulfill that duty.
And I'm saying that actually in a very general way. I would hate to see Jefferson County lose a local expert who is dedicated to looking after us. One of the criticisms of the new system that I read is that the health officers are likely to be located in the population centers, and you know, like the sort of rural areas are likely to not get as much attention.
And that's a real legitimate concern, because that's when other services have been regionalized. It's that's happened. Is smaller counties, you know, more rural areas have lost their voice.
With Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.